express my appreciation to several people.
Jay Maxwell, Tom Williams,
Lloyd Atkinson. I think that covers most of it. I took the month of August off, and I appreciate the chance to do that. I checked with my brother, who teaches in a church in Knoxville, and he took the summer off. They apparently went to a new schedule where they had an early worship service, a late worship service, and a Sunday school time in between, instead of what had been three services and two Sunday school hours. And apparently there were two groups using the same room. And so the two groups combined, and the teacher of the other group chose to teach the one, so Jim had the summer off. As usual, whatever I do, he does it a little better. Now, we are in the book of Numbers. We are working our way through the Bible. We have made it into the book of Numbers. Last time we had gotten into the middle of the book and had worked our way through Numbers chapter 12, and we're ready to start on Numbers 13. What was your assignment? To read the rest of Numbers. What is your assignment for next week? If you haven't read the rest of Numbers, read the rest of Numbers and then read all of Deuteronomy. I might as well have you getting ready for what's coming next. The thing that I want you to think about first was, what was God's plan? How long were the people supposed to stay in the wilderness before they entered the promised land? The answer is about 2 years. And we know that because we're about 2 years in, maybe a little less, coming up on about 2 years in, and chapter 13 of Numbers starts. The Lord spoke to Moses. If you're looking at that first verse of chapter 13, you can follow along with me. The Lord spoke to Moses and he said, send out men. How many?
12.
One from each tribe. How many is that?
12.
That's 12. No matter how you count it, that's 12. Remember that the other day. One from each tribe. Two, my translation uses the word reconnoiter, and it spells it with a T-R-E at the end. That's hard to pronounce. You probably have an easier pronounced word at that point. What does yours say they're supposed to do? Send out men, one from each tribe, to... Yours just says spy out the land. Is that what... Scout, yours says.
Okay.
Explore, yours says. Okay. Mine says reconnoiter. That's a military term, and maybe that's a little better than explore.
Reconnaissance.
Reconnaissance would not be bad. The land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites, each of them is to be a leading man of the tribe. At the Lord's orders, Moses sent them from the desert of Paran. All of them were leading men of Israel, and it gives you a list of their names. Okay? Who are the significant ones? Verse 6 and verse 8.
Joshua and Caleb.
Joshua and Caleb. Interesting in mine, in verse 8, it doesn't say Joshua. It says H-O-S-H-E-A, Hoshea. Does yours say that too?
Yes.
That's still Joshua. And you could almost pronounce it Yeshua, which I think is close. But those become the important two. Why are they important two? You've read the rest of Numbers, so there's a good chance you'll know. It's been a month, so there's a good chance you've forgotten. What's significant about the fact that they're two? Verse 16, such were the names of the men whom Moses sent to reconnoiter the country. Moses then gave Hoshea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. Now, I think Joshua has actually been mentioned in Scripture before, so I'm not sure why they put that particular comment there. It implies that he gave him the name at that moment. I think that may have come earlier. Moses sent them, this is verse 17, to reconnoiter the land of Canaan. Go up into the Negev, he said. Go up into the highlands, see what sort of country it is, what sort of people the inhabitants are, whether they are strong or weak, few or many. What sort of land they live on, whether it's good or poor, what sort of towns they live in, whether they're open or fortified, what sort of land it is, fertile or barren, wooden or open, be bold and bring back some of the country's produce. What time of year was it? The next verse tells me. Does the next verse tell you? It was the season for? Mine says early grapes. Yours says first grapes. First grapes. And they did that. They went up and reconnoitered the country, and you can see all the names that are there. The desert of Zin, Rehob, the pass of Hamath. Talks about Hebron, and it talks about the Valley of Eshcol, and it keeps going. How long were they there? Verse 25. 40 days. Interesting thing, if you see periods of time, very often you see 40 days or 40 years or something. Making their way to Moses, Aaron, and the whole community of Israel in the desert of Paran at Kadesh, they made their report to them and the whole community and displayed the country's produce. I don't suggest that this is a very good parallel. In fact, I think it's probably not a good parallel at all. But have you ever been on a search committee? A church search committee. I think I've told you once, I went to visit my sister-in-law out in Texas and went with her daughter, my niece, to church in a little town about 12 miles away. Walked into the church, came to visit a Sunday school class, walked into the Sunday school class, a woman came up to me and said, "Are you on a search committee?" And I said, "No, I'm not." The next little woman said, "Are you a candidate for the Minister of Music position?" And the third one said, and I quote, "Are you an escapee?" I said no to all three questions, and I need to explain the third one just for a moment. It turns out there is a group of people who have sold their homes and live in RVs. They have an organization. Somebody has an organization. The organization is housed in this little town 12 miles from where my sister-in-law lives. They call themselves the escapees. And in order for them to have some kind of place for the tax service to say this is your home, many of them have chosen this place. So they live all over the country, but for maybe a week or two a year, they come and have residence in Texas just long enough to do things. It says it's real tough to get a bond issue through because there's 37,000 escapees who vote, and that almost outnumbers the voters in the county. But anyway, that was their question. Now, if you have been on a search committee and you go to visit a church, do you go in as a group?
No,
you do not. What do you do? One goes over here, one goes over here, one goes over here. Okay, and I have a feeling that that's as far as the parallel goes. It's a terrible parallel otherwise, but I have a feeling this was not a group of 12 people walking through looking at all these places. I have a sense that different people went different places. Maybe they went two by two, but probably not more than that. Okay. After 40 days, they returned. They made their way to Moses, Aaron, and the whole community of Israel at Kadesh, and they made their report to them and the whole community, and they displayed the country's produce. This was the report they gave. Verse 27. You've read this report, right? Because you've read the rest of Numbers, you've read this report. "We made our way into the country where you sent us. It does indeed flow with milk and honey. Here is what it produces." Now, do you notice at the end of "here is what it produces," there's no more words about what it produces? Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of what happened at that moment? They're saying, "Here is what it..." I have a sense of the arms sweeping across a table or maybe some kind of a rack that they've hung things from or some display of some kind to say, "Here is what it produces," because they were bringing back all these things. Okay? "It does indeed flow with milk and honey. Here is what it produces." You almost have a sense of that moment if you hear those words. "At the same time, its inhabitants are a powerful people." Its inhabitants were not a powerful people. They were a number of different powerful people groups. It was not one group. So they're not saying this as clearly as they should have. "The towns are fortified and very big. And yes, we saw the Anakim there." What does yours say in the place of Anakim?
Anak.
A-N-A-K-I-M is what mine says at the end of verse 28.
"We saw the descendants of Anak."
Uh-huh. Anybody know what that means? I have interesting emails that come to me in part because I know too many people and my filters are not good. I received a photograph this week, actually several photographs, claiming to be discoveries in Greece and in the Middle East of giants. It showed a skeleton that was something like 9.5, 10 feet long. It showed some other things like that. And as I do when I get things like this, I did a little fact-checking and found that there had been a report of an archaeological group that had discovered some dinosaur bones way back when. And when you take the two pictures and put them on top of one another, they are identical, except that a big human skull has been sort of photoshopped in at one end of this thing, and some of the bones have been streamlined where they look a little more like humans, a little less like dinosaurs. I wish people wouldn't do that. I wish people wouldn't do that. The people who do that are often well-meaning. They pass this on and think, oh my goodness, look at this, look at this. Because what was splattered across the front of this, oh look, this proves the Bible. Okay? It's not going to be that easy, guys. It's not going to ever be that easy. Faith is not going to... Faith doesn't need that. And it doesn't help to pretend. But the Bible record says there were giants. Goliath was one, and we have a picture of him when he faced David, or when David faced him. There were giants in those days, and these guys are saying, we think we saw some. I have a photograph on the wall of my office. It's actually on the wall of a filing cabinet where I can see it from my desk. If you walk into my office, you won't be able to see it until you come all the way into the office and then look back. But in that picture, there's a picture of me with five beauty queens. A couple of you have seen this picture. It's a picture of me with five beauty queens. It was taken in a park-like area across from a restaurant called The Carnivore in Nairobi. I was in Nairobi with Olin and Lynn Burrow, whose pictures are over there on the side. We went to eat at this, who are coming in another week or so. They'll be here for at least one day, we think. Anyway, the meal wasn't quite ready, so we walked across the place, and they had this big display of crafts in big white tents. And they had the candidates for Miss Tourism Nairobi were walking around this group. And one of them, about 6 feet tall, came up to me and said, could we take a picture with you for one of the local newspapers? And I said, sure. So five beauty queens came and stood around me. All right. The six-footer stood on one side. The other four stood on the other side, sort of in descending height. The one to my right is about a half an inch taller than me. And the rest of them sort of came down to about 6'3". So the 6-footer over here looks like she's about 5'5". Right? These were tall ladies. What people group are they part of? Some of you will know. They're Maasai. They're Maasai. Could have been Zulu, but they're Maasai. There are some very tall people in Africa. And these young ladies were among that group. The one who was standing to my right, whose head was about a quarter of an inch taller than me, was wearing flats. I looked. She was wearing not quite ballet slipper-like things, but just flats. These were tall ladies. We looked, and they were giants. Now, watch where this goes. The Amalekites occupy this area. The Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites occupy the highlands. The Canaanites occupy the seacoast and the banks of the Jordan. Caleb called the people around Moses to silence. Why did he have to call the people around Moses to silence?
Everybody was like, oh my goodness.
There are giants there. What would have happened at that moment?
Everybody
would start talking. Okay, right? Glad and I first. Jack joining in real soon after. We'd be yakking it up. And Caleb says, call the people to silence and said, we must march in immediately and take it. We are certainly able to conquer it. Verse 31 starts with the word but in my translation. Mm-hmm. Does yours start that way?
Yes.
But the men who had been with him said, we can't attack these people. They're stronger than we are. And they began disparaging the company they had reconnoitered to the Israelites, saying, the country we have been to... You see how many times my translation uses the word reconnoiter? I think it's the word of the week that they're trying to learn. The country that we have been to reconnoiter is a country that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw there were of enormous size. We saw giants there too. The Anakim descended from Anak, the giants. We felt like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them. You now have two opposing points of view. What are the two opposing points of view? Caleb has expressed one. The unnamed men expressed the other. I will tell you, when you read the story a little bit further, it's not one against 11. What is it?
Two
against 10. Who's the other one?
Joshua.
That Joshua that sort of got singled out for mention. Right. He had been Moses' servant. He's been going up and down the mountain to wait for Moses while Moses has been talking to God. Those two brought a report. What's their report? It is summarized in verse 30. What's their report? We need to go. We need to go now. And we need to go now because we are able to conquer it. What's the other group? Everybody there is bigger than us. If we go up there, we're going to die. We cannot attack these people. They are bigger and stronger than we are. Okay? Which one was right? Which one was right?
Both.
They both were. What are the 10 saying? In our own strength, we don't have a chance. What are Caleb and Joshua saying? And they will say it more clearly as we get a little bit further into it. As you know if you've read this. What do they say? In God's strength, added to our strength guided by God's strength, aided by God's strength, directed by God's strength and by God's wisdom, we can certainly do this. And most of the trouble that we have ever since comes back to that moment. If I look at what I can do with the resources I have, this much. If I look at what I can do when my resources are added to God's, maybe it's more. Now, you got to be a little careful at this point. There comes a point where you can assume God is going to do all kinds of things when God has not said he's going to do those things, and you err over into presumption. But if you're in a place where God... And let me now take you back and try to put this in context. My shoe is untying, so I'm going to take a second to fix this while we think. What exactly were God's direction? What was God asking these guys to do? You're going to need to back up. Okay, you're going to need to back up. Chapter 13, verse 1. What was God's instructions? To explore, reconnoiter, scout, etc. Right? When Moses expands this, starting in verse 17, what does he say? Go up into this part, that's the lower part. Go up into the highlands, go into the lowlands, see what sort of country it is, what sort of people are, whether they're strong or weak, few or many, what sort of land they live in, whether it's good or poor, what sort of towns they live in, whether they're open or fortified, what sort of land it is. That's a great list, but there's one thing spectacularly missing from that list. What's missing from the list? They were never asked to answer one very important question. What's that question? Can we do it? They were never asked to address that question. What were they asked to do? Scout it out. What's there? Where is it? What does it look like? What kinds of fortifications are there? The decision of whether or not to go is in the mind of the commander. It is not in the mind of the soldier. If you're a scout in the army, you may come back with advice. But you don't come back to say, do or don't. That's still in the mind of the commander. A smart commander listens to his or her scouts. But it wasn't their role to decide whether they should or shouldn't go, whether they could or couldn't succeed. And yet, the whole focus of the 10 was on that. Caleb and Joshua was on lots of things up there. Lots of tough things. But we should go, and we should take it. Verse 1 of chapter 14. What's the reaction of the crowd? The crowd has heard two opposing viewpoints. There is a majority opinion, there is a minority opinion. I will comment for what it's worth. It is rare if the situation that comes about in which ignoring a minority report is a good and safe thing to do. You may listen to it and then dismiss it, but never to listen to it is always, I think, a dangerous thing to do. How did the community react? You said they raised their voices and were weeping. You said they wept. Mine says they cried out in dismay and the people wept. How long did they weep? Mine says. Does yours say?
All night long.
And they did something else.
Grumbled.
Grumbled, yours says. Anybody else?
Murmured
at, mine says. Yours says murmured against. Mine says murmured at. Murmuring had a target. Who did they murmur at?
Moses and Aaron.
And the whole community said to them, that is, Moses and Aaron, would to God we had died in Egypt, or even that we had died in this desert. Why has God brought us to this country for us to perish by the sword and for our wives and children to be seized as booty? Should we not be better off going back to Egypt? And they said to one another, let's appoint a different leader and let's go back to Egypt. Would to God, what was their wish?
That we had died.
That we had died in Egypt or had died here in the desert. Did they get their wish?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Rather than watch our wives and children be booty, who ends up going into the promised land?
Joshua
and Caleb are the only ones from this generation. And who goes with them? All those little children that are now grown up. They got their wish. Not the way they thought they would. Chapter 14, verse 5, Moses and Aaron threw themselves on their faces in front of the whole assembled community of Israelites, while Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, or something like that, the two of the men who had reconnoitered the country, there's that word again, they're still working on the word of the day, tore their clothes and addressed the whole community of Israelites as follows. The country we went to reconnoiter is a good country, an excellent country. Verse 8, if you ever underline things in Scripture, this is a good place to start underlining. If the Lord our God is pleased with us, He will lead us into this country and give it to us. It is a country flowing with milk and honey. But do not rebel against the Lord or be afraid of the people of the country, for we will, my translation uses a very picturesque word, gobble them up.
Swallow
them up, here says. Their protecting shade has deserted them, while we have the Lord on our side. Do not be afraid of them. If the Lord our God is pleased with us, He will. But do not rebel against the Lord or be afraid of the things that you face. Verse 10, the whole community was talking of stoning them when the glory of the Lord appeared to all the Israelites inside the tent of meeting, and the Lord said to Moses, well, maybe I should just start over. We've heard God say this before, testing Moses to see how Moses is going to respond. Moses, once again, I think this is the third time in the record that we've been seeing, prays for the people. Verse 17, know, my Lord, now is the time to assert your power as you promised. Verse 19, in your most faithful love, please forgive this people's guilt as you have done all the way from Egypt until now. And verse 20 and 21, God says, I will forgive them as you ask, but there is a price. And what's the price? The people who refused will die here in the wilderness, just as they have said. Not one of them will see the country which I promised to give their ancestors. Verse 23, not one of those who have treated me contemptuously will see it. However, since my servant Caleb is of another spirit, and since he has obeyed me completely, I will bring him into the country where he has been, and his descendants will own it. Tomorrow you will turn about and go back into the desert in the direction of the Sea of Suf. Now, if you were in the crowd, what would your reaction be? God has just come down and affirmed the minority report. What's your reaction? Well, let me summarize. The people's reaction was, oh, well, maybe we should go up. And all of a sudden, they just take off and attack. How did that go? Not well. The judgment had already come. There is a point where God says, turn your minds around. Go in another direction. And if you respond at that point, good. There's a point where God says that's far enough and judgment is now coming. And if you try to turn at that point, it doesn't go well. I don't know where that point is, but I can spot it as I look back. It occurs to me to wonder if the Western world is facing something like that. I don't want to be an alarmist. I think there's plenty of those around, and I don't need to add to their voices. But they have a point.
Bill, in verse 18, you skipped over. The Lord is slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness, forgiving iniquity and transgression. But he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation.
Let me ask you about verse 18, as long as you brought that up. You guys know something about punctuation? Were you here last Sunday night?
Yes.
What's an ellipsis?
Yeah.
What's a comma? Right. What punctuation do you see in verse 18?
Comma.
I see commas after faithful love, after unchecked. I see a period at the end of the sentence. Anything else? Mine's got quotation marks at the first and last of this verse. Who said this? Moses did. But it's got quotation marks. Who's he quoting? He's quoting God. Look back up at verse 17. Know, my Lord, now is the time to assert your power as you promised when you said earlier. And then he quotes God. That's a pretty bold thing to do, to quote God back to himself, try to turn God's anger and to redirect. Verse 29 gets sort of rough. Verse 28, say to them, God says to Moses, say to them, as I live, the Lord declares, I will do to you what I have heard you saying. You're going to get that wish that you said. In this desert, your dead bodies will fall. All of you who were counted in the census from the age of 20 years and over who have muttered against me, I swear none of you will enter the country which I swore most solemnly to settle you, except for Caleb and Joshua. Your children, who you said would be seized as booty, they will be the ones I will bring in so that they will get to know the country you disdained. But as for you, your dead bodies will fall in the desert. Your children will be nomads in the desert for 40 years, bearing the consequences of your faithlessness until the last one of you lies dead in the desert. For 40 days you reconnoitered the country. Each day will count as a year. For 40 years you will bear the consequences of your guilt and learn what it means to reject me. I, the Lord, have spoken this. This is how I swear to treat this entire perverse community united against me. In the desert, to the last man they will die. That's harsh. That's hard. But that's what the Bible record says. And it was at this point that they said, maybe we better go up. And when you come to the end of the chapter, verse 44 and 45, my translation uses the word presumptuously. They presumptuously went up against the inhabitants. They presumed that God would still be with them after God had said he would not. And it did not go well. Tom, you had your hand.
Yeah, I was just going to kind of, it seemed like, you know, Israel got off track here because they started out asking the wrong questions.
I'm trying
misunderstanding,
to say that, yeah.
Misunderstanding the choices that they were being given. You know, the question was not, can we overcome or can we not overcome? Because back in 13 it says, you know, explore the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to you. It's not, I mean, in God's mind, it's not a question of whether or not you can take it, but are you going to receive it? That was really the gift, I mean, the choice. Are we going to receive God's gift, or are we not going to receive it?
And that's, to me, the most important thing to see in here. God does not always speak clearly. He has spoken clearly to this group. He has spoken clearly to this people. There is a place I want you to go. There's a place I want you to live. I want you to take control of that country. I'm giving you that country. It will happen. Now, as you get ready to go, I want you to go take a look at what's coming. And when they came back, 10 of them had the idea that they had been asked to decide, can we do it? In their own strength, they could not. Their report was to that extent correct. But they had not said, wait a minute, if God is making this happen, then I need to look at his resources, not mine. So the key is, if God says, there's a task I want you to do, there's a direction I want you to go, there's a place I want you to be, then the obstacles have one look. But if there's a place you've decided to go, something you've decided to do, maybe not. And there's a pretty hard message in this chapter. And I want to make sure you see verse 44 and 45. My translation in 44 uses the word, they went up presumptuously.
Went up heedlessly.
Does yours use presumptuously? That's another great big word.
In their presumption.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's the heart of what I wanted to do this morning. And we got a little bit of time left. So what I want to do is, for a moment or two, I want to highlight a few more things in Numbers. We'll see how far we get. If we get far enough, we'll start Deuteronomy next time. If not, we'll finish up a couple more things. I don't want to rush through this, but I do want to show you a few more things. You get to chapter 15, and you go back to laws concerning sacrifices and what the priests and the Levites are supposed to do, and you get rules for first fruits, and some of the things that we've seen before. But if you come down to chapter 16, you see sort of the next big thing. There is a rebellion of some of the Levites. And some of the other people, because it mentions Reubenites as well. If you take a look at chapter 16, verse 1, it says that these people, it names four of them, names a little bit of their ancestry. The last two words in verse 1 for me says, these people were proud. Does yours say that? And the first two verses of the next verse, this is verse 2, these people, names four of them, were proud, and they rebelled against Moses, with 250 Israelites who were leaders of the community, prominent at the solemn feast, men of repute. These banded together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you take on too much on yourselves. Why set yourselves higher than the Lord's community? There's a reaction by Moses. And Moses ends up saying, we're going to see what God has to say about this. When all this is over, the punishment that comes is harsh and hard. And unbelievably rapid. You've just heard punishment that's going to take 40 years to come. This one comes much more quickly. Verse 25, Moses stood up and went to two people, elders of Israel. The elders of Israel followed him. He spoke to the community and he said, stand away, I tell you, from the tents of these sinners and touch nothing that belongs to them, for fear that with all their sins you too will be swept away. So they stepped away from Korah's tent. Verse 28, Moses said, this is how you will know that the Lord himself has sent me to perform these tasks and that I'm doing nothing of my own accord. If these people die a natural death, such as men commonly die, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord does something utterly new, such as, if, for example, and then he says something. What does he say? If the earth should suddenly open, mine says, open its mouth and swallow them and all their belongings so that they go down alive to Sheol, then you will know that these men held the Lord in contempt. And the moment he finished saying this, what happened? The ground opened up and the men and all their belongings were swallowed. Verse 33, the earth closed over them and they disappeared in the middle of the community. What did the rest of the people do who had backed up a little ways? Mine says they took to their heels. You know what it means to take to their heels? It actually means that the only thing that ever doesn't contact the ground is the heels. You're just, you know, you're up on your tippy toes running as fast as you can. We don't want the earth to swallow us too. Fire then shot out from the Lord and consumed the 250 men offering incense. They were looking to take the role in worship that God had reserved to Aaron and to his sons. Let me just go one more step. The front end of chapter 17, the metal containers in which they were offering incense were left. It's either the 39th verse of 16 or it's the 4th verse of 17, depending on how your Bible divides up the verses. The priest took those censers, hammered them into sheets, and used them to cover the altar to remind the Israelites that you need to be careful about how you offer worship. There's an echo of this in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 11, if you care to look there sometime. I don't want you to do that now. Okay. On the following day, the whole community, this is now either verse 41 of chapter 16 or verse 6 of chapter 17. Tell me which it is. I think it's verse 41 of chapter 16. Is that right? Mm-hmm. On the following day, the whole community of Israelites were muttering against Moses and Aaron. You're responsible for killing the Lord's people. As the community was banding together against Moses and Aaron, they turned toward the tent of meeting, and there was a cloud covering it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Verse 9, I hope it is in chapter 17, or else it's verse 44 in chapter 16. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Get away from this community. I'm going to destroy them here and now." And if you watch what happened, Aaron and Moses ran to guard the people from God's power, putting themselves in that place. And plague did break out, and people did die, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. The plague had been halted. There are consequences that are shown to us in this section for rebelling against what God is guiding you to do. Somehow, those consequences don't land so clearly and so quickly in our day. But I think the consequences still land. And what I invite you to do as you look at this section is to think about 40 years versus that very moment. Sometimes judgment comes in a moment. And sometimes judgment comes over a period of years. We tend to recognize it when it comes at a moment. That's pretty easy to see. We tend sometimes not to recognize it when it comes over a period of years. I think that's part of what's here. How frustrating was this for Moses? How do you think Moses felt along about now? Finding the people constantly doing things that brought God's anger to such a fever pitch, the people were in danger of being killed by God's anger.
He was probably angry at them.
Probably so. Now, there's two or three things that hide in the next couple of chapters, and I want you just very quickly to look at some of those. In chapter 17, verse 1 and 2, I think it will be for you, the Lord spoke to Moses and essentially said, "Let's do something, and I'm going to show you who my choice is. And my choice is going to be by what happens to a dead branch." And at the end of this, what you find is Aaron's branch is sprouting, even though it's unconnected to a plant, unconnected to soil, unconnected to roots. That branch went into the ark along with the tablets of the law and along with a jar of manna, to remind them of significant events. This is on a par with the miraculous feeding of the people for 40 years, on a par with the giving of the law, is God choosing specific people to do specific things and trying to help other people to understand. When you see God choosing somebody, don't try to take that choice away. So this section about Aaron's branch is in this part. I'm going to skip over a few things in here, but go to chapter 20. Go to chapter 20. I think we've got time to do this and maybe one more thing. The front end of chapter 20 is one of the strangest things you'll see in this part of the Bible, because it leaves you not really understanding why something happened. It's clear what happened, but it's a little hard to figure out why it happened from what's given in the Bible. It's almost as if something happened between God and Moses and the curtain's not being pulled back very far for you to be able to see what it was. The Israelites, the whole community, arrived in the first month at the desert of Zin. The people settled at Kadesh. There Miriam died and was buried. All that is a record of what has happened in previous chapters. I think this was chapter 10, 11, something like that. It's just picking that story back up. There was no water for the community, so they banded together against Moses and Aaron. The people laid the blame on Moses. Verse 3, "We would rather have died," they said, "as our brothers died before the Lord. Why have you brought the Lord's community into the desert for us and our livestock to die here? Why did you lead us out of Egypt?" Can you imagine what Moses might be feeling as he hears these words?
Yeah, I probably should.
"Not again. Come on, guys. Haven't you figured anything out?" Okay. Into verse 5, "Why did you lead us out of Egypt only to bring us to this wretched place? It is a place unfit for sowing. It doesn't have figs." Well, I can identify with that. I really like figs. I think figs are great. Sometimes when I go to Texas, my mother-in-law has made me fig preserves, and it's wonderful. It doesn't even have figs, doesn't have vines, doesn't have pomegranates. There's not even water to drink. Leaving the assembly, Moses and Aaron went to the entrance of the tent of meeting and prayed to the Lord. The Lord's glory came, and the Lord spoke to Moses, I'm now at verse 7, and said, verse 8, take the branch. What branch? Aaron's branch. The one that was so important, it's going to go into the ark along with the jar of manna and along with the tablets of the law. Take the branch, call the community together, you and your brother Aaron, and in full view of them, order this rock to release its water. You will release water from the rock for them and provide drink for the community and their livestock. Moses took the branch from before the Lord, as the Lord had directed him. Moses and Aaron called the assembly together in front of the rock. He said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we make water gush from this rock for you? Moses then raised his hand and struck the rock. How many times did he strike it?
Twice,
it says. Water gushed out in abundance, and the community and their livestock drank. Verse 12, the Lord then said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe that I could assert my holiness before the Israelites' eyes, you will not lead this assembly into the country I'm giving them. Whoa! What did Moses do that caused that response from God? Commentators have struggled with this. The general consensus has to do with this. Listen to what Moses and Aaron said to the people. Shall we make water come from this rock for you? Do you hear something in there that doesn't quite ring right? What did God say back in verse 8? Take the branch, call the community together, you and your brother Aaron, in full view of the community. What are you supposed to do? Haul the branch and speak to the rock. Order the rock, mine says, to release its water. Mine says, order the rock to release its water. How does yours render that one?
Speak
to the rock. Okay. You come down to verse 10. Shall we make water gush from this rock for you? Moses then raised his hand and
struck
the rock. And God punishes him. Aaron is going to die in the wilderness. Moses is going to die before he goes into the promised land, and his body will be buried in a place no one knows. Okay? One little thing quickly. So that means Moses never got into the promised land, right? Wrong. Wrong. When did he get there? During the moment of transfiguration with Jesus on top of the mountain. Moses and Elijah and Jesus and the three disciples were there to watch it. That's when Moses finally made it in. That's when Moses finally made it in. And I think there's something important to recognize in that. If you go over to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul says, the rock that followed you in the wilderness, the rock that gave you water, that rock was Jesus. That rock was, and we hear the words living water. We hear his speaking to the woman at the well. There will be water that gushes up. And that the picture of a source of water that isn't affected by weather, isn't affected by geography. Paul says Jesus is represented in that rock. They had already struck the rock once. How does Jesus provide everlasting life? Through his crucifixion and death on the cross. How many times does Jesus have to die to free us from our sins? Once. Once and for all. Once and for all. Once and for all is the drumbeat. When Moses struck the rock the second time, that symbolism was, if you will, broken. And somehow in that, that seems to be what tipped things for God, where Moses was concerned. I don't pretend to understand it. But I do think if you understand what the rock represents, if you understand what water represents, physical symbols of a spiritual truth that will become clear in the New Testament, then maybe you can begin to understand the severity of, do we do this, or is this something God does through his rock, through his son? Is the rock struck more than once? No, it's only struck once. After that, all that's required is conversation. We pray because Jesus has died and God has raised him up. That has happened once, and that's all that has to happen. Okay. Okay, we are within a minute of being out of time. Let me ask you, in what remains of Numbers, what's the big thing that's still coming? If you look at what takes space in the book of Numbers, there is something that takes four chapters. And there's nothing else that takes four chapters. It is the very strange story of Balak, Balaam, and a particular donkey who starts to talk at a funny time. I'm not sure what to make of it, but I figured out by the space given to it, by the constant references to it in the New Testament, something really, really big is going on. So that's what we're headed for. I don't want you only to look at that. I want you to take a look at the serpent raised on a stick in chapter 21. I want you to take a look at the list of worship moments. We've talked about this one before, but we're going to do it again because it's important. This is in Numbers 28 and 29. And then we'll pick out one or two other things and we'll be ready for Deuteronomy. Okay? Yeah.
They were complaining to Moses and Aaron. Hadn't Moses already said to God, you know, I can't do this by myself? And the Spirit came upon 70 or 72 men to help him?
Yes.
Why aren't those men being, or are they part of the grumbling?
Numbers 16, verse 25, Moses stood up and went to two of the rebellious people. The elders of Israel followed him. I think the elders are still backing him up for much of this time. It talks about the general community. The role of the elders just—it isn't clear. Sometimes it looks like they're on the right side. Sometimes it looks like they're on the wrong side. But certainly, several times you sort of spot them in their right place, backing up Moses, helping Moses. So I think that one's a mixed bag. But it's not clear in the record how that goes. Okay, let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, today we thank you that you do sometimes reveal to us things you want us to do, places you want us to go. And in those times, you invite us to partner with you, not in the decision of whether to go and what to do, but to partner with us in the question of how you do it and how it's to be done. We see that dimly in the story that we've seen this morning. And we see the importance of recognizing even a single voice or two in the middle of those who say you can't do what God is calling you to do, sometimes you need to listen to those. Help us clearly discern between your leading and the presumption of thinking you ought to lead. That's a hard one to do, but we realize it's important. So we pray for that today as well. Bless our church and bless us in it, for we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.